see you all there. Let me just put my grandson down. You see, I am just have the privilege today of being able to look after him, and he is such a joy. Let me just put him down, and then I can tell you our story, because you see, this little baby, this little boy, has brought our family so much hope. So much hope. But you've got to hear the whole story to understand it, because it doesn't make sense if you don't know. But let me just put him down, and then I'll be right with you. You see, his mom's out for the moment, so it's my job to look after him. And it is my favorite job in the whole world to look after my grandson, because I never thought I would have one. And now I do. You see, but that's not where the story starts. That's where we're at now. So I have to go back to the beginning, way back to the beginning. My name's Naomi, and I am from the town of Bethlehem in Judea. I'm an Israelite. I'm a child of God. But like I said, my life has not always been one of hope. See, in the time when I was younger, I got married to a man named Elimelech, and he was a great husband. He took care of me. We were blessed with two boys, Malian and Kilian, and we had a fantastic life together in the best way that we could in Bethlehem at the time. You see, but things started to happen, and our people had turned away from God once again, and so we had judges to kind of keep us on track, but we weren't always following what we should be following. We began to, as a people, turn to other gods and to worship idols of the lands around us. And me and my husband, we tried to stay true to God. We tried in everything in us and to bring our boys up knowing Yahweh, knowing the God who loves us and has called us. But life was difficult. It was so hard. You see, famine came, and I thought I knew what it was to be in want and to need. I didn't. I knew what it was to be in want. I had no idea what it was to be in need until this famine hit, and your stomach grumbles day and night and night and day. And I could put up with that, but when my two young boys would come up to me with their big eyes, and they would just say, "Mommy, I'm hungry," and I didn't have anything to give them. Nothing. Elimelech took it the hardest, because suddenly, in trying to provide for his family, there was nothing to provide. The whole nation was starving. And as you watch your sons wither away, their eyes become sunken, their bellies swollen with hunger. Your husband becomes distant because no matter how hard he works, there's no food to put on the table. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know what choice we had. It appeared that God had abandoned us. He wasn't in Bethlehem anymore. The crops were not plenty. Maybe it was a punishment for turning away from worshiping him. We got news that in Moab, that land far away, they were in a time of plenty. There was more food than what they could even eat. And so we made the very, very difficult decision to pack up our boys, to pack up our house and become refugees. It was a long journey. And we didn't really know what we were going to arrive at. We didn't know what life was going to look like in Moab. We'd never been. We'd only heard. We knew they didn't worship our God. We knew that there was other things that they were making priorities in their lives and in their cultures. And we also knew that they sacrificed children. And they did all these horrible, detestable things. But what choice did we have? There was no food. We had to go. Otherwise, we face death. And so we went, and we arrived, and life was okay. At least we had full bellies. It wasn't easy. It's never easy going to a new culture where you don't speak the language and you don't know the people, you don't know the customs. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know how to fit in. But we made it work. And then my husband died. Now it was me and two young boys. different country, at least I had a husband to protect us, and now we had nobody. You know, and when you're living in a culture where women are tossed aside, but then widows are tossed aside, it was dangerous. My sons weren't old enough to protect us. They weren't old enough to work and earn a living. And then I was left with the prospect of having to find them wives. Where was I going to find good Jewish wives within Moab? There weren't any. How was I going to carry on? You see, my whole worth was in carrying on my family's name. My husband has passed away. My boys need to find wives. We're in a foreign land. Well, as my boys grew up, they actually did me very proud. You see, I didn't have money. I couldn't pay a bride price. I didn't have real estate. I didn't have any assets that I could trade for a bride for my sons. And yet they found these two beautiful girls whose families were willing to allow them to become a part of our family, Orpah and Ruth. And we had a glimmer of hope because there was an opportunity for our family name to carry on. So they got married, and we celebrated as best as we could. We were joyful as most as we could, despite all the circumstances. But 10 years passed. 10 whole years. And not a single child. Nothing. Barren. And then to make matters worse, when you still think there's some hope that they would conceive, both of my sons died, leaving us three widows with no children in a land that was unkind to widows. I don't know how Orpah and Ruth stayed with me as long as they did, because all I could say was, God, why me? Why? God, where are you? How could you let this happen? I don't see you. You're not here. Why, God? Why me? First my husband and now my boys, and we have no future. Why, God? Why? And there was never an answer. There was never an assurance that I'm still here. Don't lose heart. Don't worry, Naomi. I've got your back. There was nothing. The famine in Bethlehem, I heard it was over. Left with no money, no future. In a dangerous situation, my only choice was to return. I didn't know what I was returning to. It's not a lot better. Remember, our people were not following God. They'd abandoned him. Our law says to look after the widows, but I didn't know if they were following. They weren't when we left. So what would have changed? But I didn't have another choice. I had to go. So we went. We left. And along the road, I couldn't have Orpah and Ruth come with me. You see, they were still young. They had a future. There was no way that my womb was going to produce another son for them to be able to wait to grow up so that they could marry at the off chance that they could carry on my name. I had to let them go. The only way that they were going to be safe is if they went back to their family. Because then they were young enough that maybe somebody would take pity on them and bring them as their wife. And they still had that opportunity for life. So I begged them, I pleaded with them, girls, please don't come with me. There's nothing for me in Bethlehem and there's nothing for you. But I have to go back, but you don't. Go home. Go back to your people. Go back to your gods. I hate to admit it, but I was very open with how I was feeling that God had abandoned me and just turned his hand against me. They knew. And along the road, when there was no way I could turn back, in the begging and the pleading, Orpah finally got her senses and she went home. She left. I blessed her and she went. But Ruth was a different story. She wouldn't go. No matter how much I begged and I pleaded, to your senses, girl. There's nothing for you here. Nobody's going to want to marry a Moabite woman. If you come with me, you're destined for widowhood the rest of your life. No prospects, no future. Go home. But Ruth said something to me on that day, along that road, that ultimately changed the trajectory of our future. Because she grabbed a hold of me and she looked me in the face and she says, Naomi, wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God will be my God. I didn't know what to say to her. I wanted to scream at her, do you not know that God's abandoned me? Have you not seen what has happened? How can you say that my God will be your God? He's left us. But I didn't. She's seen that. She knew that's where I was. She knew that was what was going through my head and that there was nothing to change that. But she refused to leave. You know, on that day, I began to realize in the pit of my despair, when nothing could get any worse, that there was still hope. And it came from my pagan worshiping daughter-in-law. She saw something in Yahweh that I didn't even recognize. A faithfulness and a love that transcends all understanding. I felt like I had been abandoned, and yet that day, I felt God wrap his arms around me and say, Naomi, I'm with you. We went back to Bethlehem. It was still a long journey. We arrived and rumors started, you know, people started talking of, oh, it's Naomi. She's back. She's back from Moab. Is that really Naomi? I didn't look like I looked when we left. And I had to say to him, no, don't call me Naomi. That's not my name. Call me Mara, because my life is full of bitterness. God has dealt his hand against me, and it has been bitter. So don't call me Naomi. There's no joy left. There's nothing left for me. We arrived into the rubble that was our lives, not knowing what we were going to do, not knowing who we were going to look out for to help us, to support us, not knowing what the future held. But with Ruth by my side, we stayed there. You know, and looking back now, when you're in it, when you're in the middle of the storm, when you're in a place where you just can't see above the rails because everything just seems to be crashing down on you. When I look back now, I can see God's handiwork in every single element of our situation. Only now can I see all the pieces and how they've worked together. It doesn't make it easier. Every day I wish my husband was still alive. Every day I wish I could hear my boys laugh, that their wives would have them by their side, that we would ultimately have grandchildren and that we'd be blessed with all of this family as we're, you know, that's what we desire. It doesn't make it easier, but I can see God working in all of it. God's hand wasn't against me. There's a much bigger picture. So us two widows, one a Moabite, both barren with nowhere to turn, set up life in Bethlehem. You know, I said that my life was bitter, and we did have nothing. All we could see was the rubble that we were in. Everything was a mess. But now I know that God is always mysteriously at work in the rubble. And what a mystery it is that's brought me to where I am today. But amazing things happened. that now that we're on this side of it, we can see how God was putting together pieces, working in his masterpiece, the only way that he can, as he poured out his hesed love on us. The mercy and the grace and the love and this the embodiment of who God is. He hadn't given up. He hadn't abandoned us. I'm going to let Ruth and Boaz tell their part of the story because it involves them. I kind of became a sideline character as their story unfolded of God's love for us. But know this. God uses our suffering to equip us for what is to come. He doesn't just abandon us. He doesn't cause our suffering, but he does use it. I was mistaken in thinking that God had abandoned us. He never left. I just didn't see him. I was at the lowest point that I could get, but God raised me up. He loves me with an everlasting love. There is still pain, but I know that my God is with me and that there is nothing to fear. Because of this, I can say, your kindness, Lord, and love will always be with me each day of my life, and I will live forever in your house. You see, my fate in this world gave me no hope. But in God's kingdom, I became his image in a little town of Bethlehem. My daughter-in-law, she became a child of God. A Moabite woman who was a pagan worshiper became a child of the King of Kings. In my darkness, I was still able to bear the light that comes from our Creator. And being a light bearer in the middle of the darkness can only come through his strength, and I know that now. Where hopelessness reigns, faith gave birth to hope, and it comes